So I'd love to hear a few examples of what you noticed.
There were some body positions I don't think I've ever done in my life. Uh-huh.
Is this your partner right here?
Yeah. And so sitting was very different. Like, when I sit down, there's a lot to sit down, so it's like, you know, rest and back, and she was very postured, and as she put it, ladylike in terms of the way that she sits. So it, by the time we'd gone through the rotation, it came back to what we had originally looked at from when I started mimicking her. I actually did feel shorter at the end of it. I felt like
see, that's something that's really common too, is just your angles of vision, you know, looking out from wherever your eyes are, however tall you are, you know, then the tendency to angle up versus angle down kind of a thing. So a taller person, you would think, might have the tendency to tilt down a bit in their perception, whereas a shorter person might tilt up in their perception. So it's fascinating to go, even if you make that little shift, what else does it do? What else does it do to your system? So, great example. What else?
So when I was following him, I noticed that his body, the other body leaned this way, and his left step is heavier. Mm-hmm. So I asked him.
She's analyzing.
No, I just noticed. And then I asked him, he said he has a bad knee, left side. So
uh-huh.
I'm like, yes!
She's going through a physical therapy.
Yes. Yeah. and when we were walking, I also, because we have height difference, so he can see over something and I couldn't, and I was behind him. See what he's looking at, so there are difficulties there too.
But when sure. We came back and looked at her perspective, we were behind the fence, and when we came back, I focused on the trees in front of the tree instead of what was over the fence.
Mm-hmm.
When we originally looked at it, I looked at things over the fence, mm. The bigger picture, and when I came back, I looked at the stuff in front. Right. So it was really bizarre.
Yeah. And that's really the kind of thing that, you know, this exercise is intended to do, is when you adopt somebody else's physiology, it's going to change the way you look at the world and what you notice.
So if you, for example, if she's trying to help me or counsel me or be my other, be second in mm-hmm. line, if she can't see over the fence, how do you compensate for that?
Well, there are other elements. So we're doing this on a... Oh, sure.
There are different angles that you don't see of that other person that you're imagining. Mm-hmm. So that means you have to be really imaginative if you're thinking about stuff over the fence.
Right. Well, sure, there's lots of different ways you could explore that. So one, on the one hand, is it gives you an awareness of what another person may or may not be able to perceive, given their, you know, we're talking more physiology, like their physical height, they may not be able to see over. So they may have to guess or imagine what's over there, kind of a thing. And if you're trying to understand their perception, you know, trying to get a handle on their map, so that you would, right. And it can, yeah, it can go both ways.
I think the biggest thing is when you see a different perspective, you see that everybody's not seeing yours.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not assuming they're seeing what you're seeing, and you might ask, you get little cues and you say, they're not seeing what I'm seeing, so you can ask
yeah.
questions and kind of get to that. And I noticed when we did the walk, he was kind of looking straight forward and a little around. So when we first looked at something, I was noticing the breeze and the trees and the colors like around. And after the walk, I looked at it and I looked straight across.
Mm.
And he did say he was very focused. And after the walk, I think he maybe looked around.
Yeah, interesting. And I think that's one of the big ahas of partly that NLP offers in general, but what you pointed out in particular is that it gets us out of our assumption that everybody's seeing the world the way we see it, or that people should see it the way we see it, kind of a thing, that our view is the correct point of view. And that opens up the opportunity to go, wow, there's multiple points of view that we could explore here. And there can be multiple correct points of view. And so the richer you can explore and have those multiple descriptions of reality and then integrate them in your understanding, you're going to have a richer understanding of not only the context of the situation, but hopefully have some insight as to how to be effective in that context, how to be effective in dealing with something. I do a lot of time. In fact, I'm about to embark on this massive project with the Oregon Department of Revenue. And so these are the tax folks. And we've got heavy-duty union management issues going on in this department. So we got the contract. I get to go in and train every single employee, 1,000 employees, to, of course, in a group, not one-on-one. So this kind of thing, you know, would be extremely helpful for them to be able and willing to look at these issues from the other side's point of view. And at the very least, to understand and to be able to communicate about that. And I think that would go a long way. But imagine all of the different contexts where that would be really helpful, whether it be in family situations or coworker situations, even, you know, if you have disagreements or conflicts with friends, you know, expanding it up to, you know, we touched on a little bit, you know, communities or nations or, you know, bigger political groups, religious groups, to be able to expand it out and to have this kind of ability and willingness to look at things from multiple points of view.
As a coach, and I would really suggest this to all people who want to coach you, I use this usually on the first session that I have with a person. In the first 10-15 minutes, we go for a walk. At that point, I get the opportunity to completely feel what's going on with them. Plus, I get a great opportunity to match them, to create a rapport while walking, while talking, and you can really implement that right in that spot and get in your body. The person becomes very associated with that, and you learn a lot by them simply by taking from their posture like that, like you just did as well. So for coaches, take this with you, absolutely.
It's a great, also, you know, as we get more into the actual NLP processes, when you engage in a process with somebody and you go into the phase of information gathering. So you want to gather information about their present state, their desired state, and so on. And it's really useful to go and try to go other with them to understand as much as you can from their perspective how they're perceiving their situation, how they are perceiving their current state, how they are perceiving their desired state, and what they think they might need to get from one place to another. And to be able to hold that separately from what you think. Because you might have a thought in your mind about, I think their present state is this, I think their desired state is that, I think this is the resource they need. And there may be even be an additional thought of, this is what I think they should do, right? If I were to advise them, this is what I would advise them to do, which may be different from what they want or what they think they need. And to be able to gather information and just hold them as distinct in your mind.
I just wanted to concur with Larry that this piece of it is emotional intelligence, which is a huge value nowadays. Corporations are looking for it. Like, it's a really big piece. Daniel Goleman wrote a book, a few of you might know his book about emotional intelligence. And then I also have a really wonderful article that I just got. It says, it's diversity makes us more intelligent. Mm-hmm. So if anybody wants that article, let me know. You can give me your email address and I'll forward it to you. But it all really relates to what we're talking about right now.
Nice.
It was great that we did it for a long time and with a minimal amount of talking. Mm-hmm. Because it kind of got the talking out of the way, and so you can really kind of get into it. And one of the really interesting things was not only our work, but just seeing everybody else. And it was kind of coming in subconsciously, peripheral vision. So many different postures and things going on. That was very, very interesting, very profound.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So one of the things, too, I just want to reiterate that in NLP, what we're wanting to train you here is not only the ability to switch among them to gather information, but so that you don't find yourself getting stuck in any of them. And so, for example, if let's say that this other person is feeling very unresourceful, they might be upset about something. They might be, you know, go clear into some deep trauma. Now, if you want to gather information, you might, you know, float into them, become other with them to get a sense for what they're experiencing. But you don't want to stay there, or get stuck there. One of the areas that I train in is called the Center for Inner Awareness, and it's a metaphysical university. And so many of the people who go to that school identify themselves as intuitives and empaths. And so they have the experience of feeling other people's feelings, but they get stuck in it very, very easily. And so they have a very difficult time managing their own state because they perceive themselves as taking on other people's energy, other people's states, and that they don't have choice about that. That they walk into, say, a grocery store or something like that, and it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming for them to be there because they're perceiving all of these other feelings that they think are not theirs. And so being able to have the ability to not be here is another useful skill, so that they can be here and they can be stably here if they choose, or they could be here and be stable there if they choose, but that they're not stuck over here and constantly being bombarded by other people's feelings. So that the idea here, the skill, is to be able to switch among them quickly and easily, to gather information and then come back into yourself and to be at choice with all of them. So I'd invite you into an experience of that and do this as an inner experience. So I'd invite you to think back to perhaps an argument that you had with somebody in the past. And not a brutal argument, but like we were saying this morning, just a disagreement. You had a disagreement with somebody about something in the past. So bring up that event in your mind. And observe that event from your own perspective. Be in your body, looking out your eyes, hearing what you heard, seeing what you saw, hearing what you heard, feeling what you felt in that moment. And you might notice how, as you look at that event through your own eyes, that those feelings come back a little bit. Just be with that for a moment. Now take a big, deep breath. And now imagine that you could float up out of yourself and float off to the side into that observer position. That you could be there off to the side, or maybe even floating above in this scenario. And you can see you over there, and you can see them over there. And observe the interaction between the two of those two people. And you notice how one is responding to the other and vice versa. Notice the facial expressions, the body language, the tones of voice, the words. And that you can observe this from that neutral observer position with perhaps curiosity, interest as to how they are interacting with each other, how they're influencing each other, gathering information from that perspective. Then with another deep breath, again, now floating up out of that observer position and floating into the other person, so that you mentally enter into them. And you can replay this scenario through their eyes, hearing what they are hearing, feeling what they are feeling. Notice what that's like as you look back. You can see that other you over there. The facial expressions, the body language, the tones of voice. And with another deep breath, Now, bringing your perspective back to that observer position so that you can see the other you and that other person still in that interaction. Now you're replaying it again, having gathered information from both of those perspectives. You can observe them again and notice that pattern of interaction. And with another deep breath, now returning back to your self position. Being in your own body, seeing with your own eyes, hearing with your own ears, feeling with your own feelings, your own body. And replay that scenario one more time, having gathered this additional information. And another deep breath. You can come on back to this room here and now. Being in your body, looking out your eyes. It's always important to come back. Don't want any disembodied folks flying around the room.
That experience brings up an interesting question for me. Is it possible, can you get to the point where you can do this in real time when you're actually engaged in the situation?
Absolutely. So you can get very, very good at it. Even in scenarios where there may be multiple people involved, you can quickly plop into each perceptual position and come back and do it on the fly as the thing is unfolding, depending on what you're noticing or what might be relevant in the moment. So
you can do that without breaking rapport, without people noticing, like, hey, wow, you're spacing out.
See, what happens is, like, We're building a set of skills that are nested in each other, okay? They're building and expanding on each other. And the more you practice it and the more you integrate it, the more you get it in, you're going to do more of it naturally, unconsciously, automatically, and it frees up the conscious mind to pay attention to other things. And so on one level, your unconscious mind might be tracking a bunch of things, making that available as it's useful, but your conscious mind could be paying attention to some other little piece of the interaction. So just like any other set of skills, you see tennis players out there, for example, master tennis players, they're unconsciously doing all kinds of amazing, you know, things with their body, and they're not consciously paying attention to it because they've integrated those skills on another level. But you get me out there playing tennis, and I've got to, like, you know, really pay attention to what I'm doing, and it's because I haven't integrated on that level. So you're going to expand your skill sets, and more of this is going to be just automatic. So I'm curious about your experience with that little, we call it triple description as a technique, and there's a handout in your book. So to be able to gather information from at least these three perceptual positions, especially in a context where you may be in conflict with somebody or somebody's being unresourceful, what changed as you think back on that experience you were thinking about? What's different now, having had, now that you've got more information from those different perceptual positions?
Emotion was decreased as I looked at the situation outside myself.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, from my personal perspective, I was in it the first time, I'm going through, I'm feeling the emotion, but as we walked through the exercise and I started looking at myself from another point of view, it's like, okay, there's Quinn going, having that little conflict there, and I didn't feel what I was feeling
right.
From my perspective.
Yeah. And that's what we would anticipate would happen. Is that if you're looking at it from another perspective, you're going to have a different response. You're going to have a different feeling about it. And because you're literally looking at it. Have you ever said to somebody, if I were you, I'd feel the same way? Okay? Well, that's always literally true, isn't it? If you were them, you would exactly feel that way. Yeah? Thank you. So that's... And so having gathered that information, oftentimes you get a richer description, you get a richer understanding of what's going on, And that often can be very helpful to handle it in a more resourceful way or more effective way.
You know, in doing this, I was thinking about there are certain themes in the way I respond to certain things. And being the observer, I could see this emotion directed at me, and I was actually thinking, what can I do with that? That's what I don't like. I'm seeing what I don't like. And I was able to visualize just breaking that up. Mm. So that emotion is not at me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of all over.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very freeing.
Mm-hmm. Nice. You know, I remember... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I just saw... Like, I see, I understand why I'm getting the response I'm getting, given what I actually do
mm-hmm.
in that conflict situation. So I kind of see what I can do differently.
Mm-hmm. So now, having... seen that, you can, like, you're more at choice potentially, you know, that hey, I can do things differently because I understand that what I'm doing is evoking this response, and so if you wanted a different response, you could do something different. Very nice.
It's hard to stay neutral, especially if you're emotionally involved. How do you practice and like, become neutral in terms?
Go there more often. So it's a this. Practicing it, just like you said, that if you practice it more, you get better at it, and you can be more at choice. I would venture to say that we naturally will tend to gravitate to these positions. You know, we may be more comfortable here, or used to being here versus here, versus here. And so, understanding, remember the theme of understanding yourself and understanding. Well, I tend to be more in first position most of the time, or second or third kind of a thing. You understand yourself better. And then you can expand from there. The ideal from an NLP practitioner perspective is that you would be equally able to access any one of them equally. And it takes practice. It's outside the comfort zone. It's like interlock your fingers this way, just like the way you would normally interlock your fingers. And now switch it so that the other fingers are on top. Okay? How does that feel? Okay? It's weird, isn't it? Okay? You're not used to it. Is there anything wrong with this one versus this one? No, you're just not used to it. So it's a matter of just, and if you kept doing this, if you kept practicing it, then it wouldn't matter which way you did your fingers. You could do it equally well.
A concept that's useful for me in this is to set aside emotion and ego.
Mm-hmm.
That is, validate without agreeing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a pretty big breakthrough mm-hmm. that I could accept where they were, but it didn't mean I agree with it.
Right. Just, yeah. Exactly.
My stuff got in the way.
Yep.
It was interesting as if now if I would have to do it again, I would actually do what the other person did.
Yeah.
Because it's as if, you know, if you're speaking two languages, it doesn't matter. You don't understand each other, so might as well speak his language so we can communicate.
Right. Yeah.
It's interesting. I wouldn't even do my modified, I would do this.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting to experiment with at least and see what kind of results you would get with it. Because, you know, I experienced this. Well, give you an example. The first time I did this exercise in my NLP practitioner training, I went back to an event. My son was about 3 years old, and my wife at the time was pregnant with our daughter. And she had an intense morning sickness throughout her whole pregnancy with our second one. With the first one, it was normal. The first trimester, she had morning sickness. Then the second, with our second child, she had it through the whole thing, and it was just intense, debilitating morning sickness. And so, and at the time we were moving, so I packed everything up and we moved us and unpacked everything, and then working full time, taking care of her, taking care of the son. So I was a little stressed out during this period of time. Well, one night, I was just so tired. I just wanted to go to bed, and my son was having a hard time going to sleep. And so he kept getting up out of bed, and his dad, can I have a glass of water? So I go get a glass of water, bring in the water, go in, and I'm just starting to drift off, and he comes in again. Dad, can I have he wanted this Thomas the Tank Engine train toy, okay? Shining Time Station, like little LSD trips, you know, with the faces on the ends. So so he wants the toy, and then I go back to sleep, and then he wants another toy, and that toy happens to be in a box in the garage downstairs. And I'm getting more and more frustrated every time he asks me. And I'm getting, you know, so I get him in and I'm being more threatening to him. It's like, you stay in bed now, you know, my tonality and everything. And then at one point, and this was shortly after Halloween, and I said, look, if you get out of bed again, I'm taking all your Halloween candy. Okay? So he stayed in bed after that. But when I did this exercise on that event, okay, so here I look through my own eyes, then I floated into him and looked through these three-year-old eyes back at Dad, going, why is Dad so upset? I just want my toy. I just want a drink of water. Why is he so angry with me? I was shocked. Then I floated off to the side as if one of my neighbors was watching me. And I was like, I felt totally ashamed at my behavior in that moment. But from my own perspective, I was like, good Lord, I just want to sleep. You know, I just need some rest. But it was intense. It was really intense to experience that event from those different points of view. And it completely changed my understanding of that event. So it can be extremely powerful.